Good morning. It's time for Free for All, your morning telephone discussion program from KATI.
And good morning indeed. This is Dave Nutter, or at one point in time known as the real Don Steele. And welcome into another very special edition of Free for All. Today we are joined by an extravagant group of people that are from, once again, all over the world, and former KATI employees and announcers. Here in the studio with me is the one, the only Warren W. Cook, or also known as The Blob in the early years. Good morning.
Good morning.
Also in the studio, the very lovely Judy Lewis, who worked at KATI, I think, probably almost as long as all of the veterans. Good morning, Judy.
Good morning.
On the phone with us from, as he was yesterday, from Puerto Rico, is Bill Sims, or he, as he's known now, Will Sims. And good morning to you.
Hello, hello. How are you?
Good. Actually, it's probably late afternoon for you. From Kalispell, Montana, in the North Country, is Larry Leroy Wakefield. Hi, Larry.
Good morning. Thanks very much for having us.
It's great to hear all of these voices of the past. Now we're going to go south of the border to Tucson, Arizona, where we have Bob Clemens, or Bob Young. Hi, Bob.
Hello, Dave, and what a terrific group of people you have assembled here.
Well, you know, in days past, there would be law enforcement around, but, you know, I think the statute of limitations has run out. And as we head west, we have on the line, he went by Don Sherwood on the air, but he, like I, had that other person that was in our lives. His real name is Alan Bowker. Alan, welcome to the program.
Good morning. Nice to be here. Nice to hear everyone's voices again.
You know, that is one of the things that we've been hearing yesterday is, in many cases, this is the first time that we've talked to people for, in some cases, 40 years or so. Larry, didn't you say that you and Bill were talking a bit earlier? When was the last time you actually saw each other or spoke to each other?
Well, I think Bill and I saw each other at a couple of broadcasters conventions, probably in the early 70s. That was
maybe,
the last
time. I was going to say late 60s. Could have been early 70s.
Yeah, could have been. Yeah.
So that's, you know, 30, almost 40 years.
I give credit to Bill. He was my mentor when I came to Casper, and he made the transition for me to take his position easy, and I give credit to Bill.
Now, one of the things that I find that is interesting is the people that were at KATI learned an awful lot. KATI was like a small junior college in those days. The trades that people learned at KATI, they took elsewhere. Larry, you were at KATI all the way into the late 70s, but then where did you go after that?
Well, when I left Casper in 1978, I started there in 66, and then I moved to Anaconda, Montana, and bought radio stations there. Sold those in 81 and moved to Kalispell, where I am presently. Started a real estate firm here.
Bill Sims, kind of, you did the same route. And we didn't talk about this a lot yesterday, but you left KATI in 68, 69, sometime in that.
69, yes.
And didn't you go to KATI, or did you go to Sheridan first?
Never lived in Sheridan. Although for a while, my company owned the Sheridan stations.
Okay, that's what it was.
KATI, I was a partner with Tom Strook, former ambassador, you know, former state senator, and so on. We had KODI in KATI. I was there a couple of years. We kept the station longer than that. A guy named Dorsch Miller managed it for me after that. But I went to Laramie. I was in Laramie 9 years. We bought a station called KLME and changed it to KOJO, K-O-J-O, and then added FM to it. In the meantime, we bought Sheridan and added FM up there as well, and put on the air Cougar over in Green River during that time. That's a project I'd been working on, actually, when I was still working with Pat at KATI. And then I left Wyoming and went to New Mexico, where I came from, and did a number of stations, primarily in Santa Fe in New Mexico.
You still, to this day, own a radio station in Puerto Rico?
I'm actually a minority stockholder of a radio station in Puerto Rico, yes. My girlfriend and her family own it. and I'm just sort of the unpaid silent consultant.
I noticed that whenever you want to use a microphone, you can still go to the radio station and they will let you in, correct?
They will, they will. I'm actually here, I'm at the station now because you said to use a landline, and otherwise I just have a cell phone, so I came to the radio station to use their phone.
One of the other folks who's still in the business is Alan Bowker, Don Sherwood, out in California. What was your path to the Sunshine State, Alan?
So to reiterate, Bill Sims hired me in August of 1964 when I was a junior in high school at NCHS and put me on mornings. And I worked for 2 years for Bill and then went down to the university, had a broadcasting scholarship from the Wyoming Association of Broadcasters, became the manager of KUWR. But in the summer, I would go to California and take summer jobs. And 1 year at San Bernardino, the next year San Diego, the following year in 1970 at KNBR in San Francisco. And I kind of liked it here. When I graduated from the University of Wyoming, I spent about 9 months at KTWO Radio doing afternoons, and then said, you know, I really don't like the Wyoming winters all that much, and California seems a lot better. So in the fall of 72, I applied to San Francisco State for their master's programs in broadcast communication arts and got accepted. And a few weeks later, got a job at CBS Radio.
Wow.
Where I was for 5 years. And during that time, computers came in, home computers, and we automated our FM side. And I took some training, and after the time at CBS and 1 year at Cox Broadcasting and Television, I said, you know, these computers are pretty neat. And I spent about 25 years as an IT director at Dolby Laboratories and Homestake Mining and a few other firms. But I got a yen to go back to broadcasting, and after a few years of retirement, I got a call from a friend over here at ABC Television, KGO in San Francisco, where I've been just about 3 years now working in information technology and broadcast engineering, and I'm really having the time of my life. But I'll tell you, I have a great deal of nostalgia about Katie. It was very formative and gave me great training, especially under the tutelage of Mr. Sims there.
Our next up on the line is Warren Cook, who has remained in Casper. Mr. Blob, or Blob, tell me about what you've been doing for the last 40 years. I know you are into the engineering field.
Well, I worked for Katie twice. First time was in October of 62 under Bill Yeager, who you were talking to yesterday, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And he fired me on February the 3rd of 63. So I was only there for a couple of months the first time around. Second time, I went over to KVOC,
mm-hmm.
and I was hired and fired the same day. I went in and applied for a job and did the air tape and was hired by Mr. Woodward. And as I was leaving the studio, this tall, gangly guy in a blue car came trotting in. I didn't know who it was at the time. Of course, it was Bob Young. And I got a phone call the same day, and he says, we had a guy come in that just ran circles around you, so we don't need you to even bother to come in. That was my introduction to Bob Young. I then went over to Katie and talked to Bill Sims and was hired on June 15th of 1965. Asked to do yard work as well and some janitorial stuff for a little extra money. I was going to Casper College at the time. And I was out in the yard one day, this was in July, about a month later, and here comes this blue car, and this tall, gangly guy comes out and runs in the studio. And I thought, oh, no. Well, there goes this job. And, of course, it was Bob Young.
Bob Young, you better defend yourself here, buddy.
I just really don't know what to say. I have apologized over the many, many years.
Well, you still need to apologize.
Terrible.
But now, Warren, you've been doing, as I call it, reverse engineering and doing a lot of work over the years at your company here in town, right?
Well, after Katie, I went to Automation Electronics for 9 years.
Mm-hmm.
They were an oil field automation company. After that, I installed a shop for installation and repair of business radios for a little company that three kids right out of college started. That took 3 years. And then I went out on my own, went to all the car dealers and got a warranty service for the three big auto companies to repair auto radios. along with that, doing home stereo and audio and stuff. And the drawing thing came from A&E, actually. We got a lot of stuff in to repair, and without any kind of schematics, it's pretty hard to do any repair on it. So I would sit down and draw a lot of this stuff up. I enjoyed that. So when I stopped doing the car radios, I started drawing under contract.
And so if somebody had a radio or a piece of electronic equipment, why, you could go back through and figure out how it was actually wired and whatnot, even without a schematic.
Well, I tear it down and make a schematic.
I see.
That's the whole idea. And then they can troubleshoot and repair. Right now, my biggest customers is the Nuclear Undersea Warfare Center in Washington.
Wow.
And NASA in Florida.
Wow.
On the back of these astronauts, when you see them out on the ETA, they've got a white backpack on.
Mm-hmm.
Inside that is a medical monitors that measures their heartbeat and respiration and all that. And the company that was building those didn't give the NASA any documentation, and so when they wanted to repair those, they didn't have any way to do it, and I've been drawing that for them.
Wow.
So they can repair them, and that's pretty much what I'm doing today.
I noticed there's no retirement in this group, maybe with the exception of Bill Sims. Next up on the list is Bob Young. Bob, I know that you went for warmer climes, just like several others, now down in Tucson. What's your background? What have you been doing?
Well, for the last couple of years, I've been very happily putzing around in my own little studio here. I have discovered electronic music, and I have scored a tremendous piece of equipment. It's called a Korg Oasis synthesizer. So I've been fooling around with that, doing a little voiceover work here and there, just generally trying to stay off the streets and safe in places.
And out of jail?
And out of jail. So far, I've been really lucky there.
That's a good thing. Judy Lewis, you are still in communications and broadcasting here in Casper.
Yes, I am. I am a general sales manager for CBS, Fox, and CW.
And you sell advertising time?
Yes, I do.
And you've been there almost as long as the stations have.
Well, you know what? I've been at this particular station for 19 years, and almost that long in radio. But I have to tell you something. Mr. Wakefield sent me out to sell a Christmas package. It was a disaster. I couldn't sell anything. And now to think that now, this many years later, where I am. But I do owe that first bit of selling to Mr. Wakefield. So thank you, sir.
You're welcome, Judy.
I remember Judy, and Warren would probably remember the Katie quizzes that they used to run every hour in the evening and whatnot. Well, Judy was that beautiful face that you would see when you first walked into the radio station over there at 1400 Katie Lane, and you'd be picking up your two movie passes or what else? Let's see. You would do six packs of Pepsi, movie passes to Egg McMuffins.
Oh, yeah, and 45s. It seemed like we were always giving out records of some kind.
The Katie Prize Closet.
I know, yeah, that was fabulous.
I would like to play a little piece of audio, and you can tell me if anybody recognizes this particular piece. Just shout right out and who's doing it.
First in service to our community, this is KATI Casper, Family Radio, a proud member of the National Association of Broadcasters and a subscriber to the Radio Code of Good Practice. As a member of NAB, KATI is pleased to present the very best in radio programming. KATI honors the restrictions prescribed by the NAB without over-commercialization or other forms of poor programming.
I just had to put that in there. Larry, did you and Bill, did you abide by that NAB code all the time?
Oh, probably not. Hopefully not, if we were selling advertising.
That was the voice of the one and the only Bob Young from about 1965.
You're so kidding.
No, 1965, Bob.
I would never have recognized it.
Only 44 years ago. Seems like only yesterday, eh, Bob?
Well, it really does.
Well, I'll tell you what, folks. Let's take a little break. And what we would like to do next is, when we come back, I have a couple of air checks from a couple of the individuals that are here in this studio. And we would like to kind of give you a comparison of what Katie sounded like. Katie was almost like two different radio stations. Would you agree, guys? One in the daytime and one at night?
Yep.
Absolutely.
You know, it was there were audiences that were in school during the day, and obviously Katie was trying to go for a more adult group during the day, but then at 3 o'clock it was a totally different radio station. So anyway, we will take a little break. We'll be right back as we look back at KATI on this Katy Classic Weekend. Once again, back with a great group of guys and gals from Katy's past. Judy Lewis is here, who is currently selling television advertising in and around the Casper area. Joining us also in the studio is Warren W. Cook, the Blob. He was on Katy from, in a couple of different times, the early 60s and then again in the mid-60s. From Tucson, Arizona, Bob Young is joining us. He is currently semi-retired. Would we say that, Bob?
We could say that, yes. That's good.
Semi-retired, and he has a small studio in his home. Alan Bowker is in engineering out in California for KGO Television. Larry Wakefield is in real estate up in Kalispell, Montana. And Bill Sims, also kind of semi-retired in Puerto Rico, but part owner of a radio station. Welcome back, everybody. Let's talk a little bit about the various incarnations of Katy. Katy originally started down in the basement of the Midwest Building in a place called the Katy Cave. At what point did KATI move over to the old house on McKinley? Does anybody remember, Bill?
See, I'm 64, I think, probably.
Oh, no. I think it was before that, Bill. I think it was probably 62 to 314 North McKinley.
And that, I think let's compromise on 63 then, because I wasn't at Katy for much of 62. And when I came back, we were still on McKinley. That's when Pat bought the station, came back as the program director. And then during that time, he started to want to move to what is what in Katy Lane. So maybe 63.
Okay.
What on earth would make you want to move to an old house and converted into radio studios? Because Warren had some pictures that I saw, and it wasn't the most lovely of places.
No,
but
it was fine.
That was Ken and Misha Prather's doing to move to the house. That was before Pat owned the station. I guess Pat was the third owner during the time that Ken and Misha Prather had it, but they're the ones who were in the house.
Well, from what I understand, Katy used a piece of automation equipment that was like a glorified jukebox or something, and everybody did their shows there.
It was the Gates Night Watch, and it came on at 9 o'clock at night. And both Sergeant McClintock and Armand Noble with the Hootie Owl Show used the Gates Night Watch. And it was a combination of a jukebox, which played 45s, and a reel-to-reel tape deck for voice tracks. And they would be on from 9 until 11 o'clock doing that. And it would take the 45, it would load it. The way it was cued is it would spin the disc twice, and wherever the stylus was, that's where the audio started. But both those guys were very popular. Both Armand and Sarge McClintock were very, very popular guys at night at Katy.
Warren, now you did not, when you were doing the nighttime show at Katy, you didn't use that piece of equipment, though, did you?
No, it was before my time, and possibly during the gap that I wasn't there. I saw it in the production room, but I never used it.
Yeah, it was gone by
the show. When I started there, I was doing the logs. I was the traffic director in place of Misha Prather. And my show was 8 to midnight, and I did it live. There was no machine.
Let's take a little look. We talked about the two personalities of KATI. And Bill, since you were in management at that point in time, talk a little bit about what the Katy profile was during the day.
Well, first, there was a major shift, it seems to me, or change that came when Pat Meenan wanted to join the CBS network. Before that, you know, we didn't do a lot of information. We did some, reading our own news, I remember, from AP, Associated Press. The switch to CBS made a big difference in the station, it seems to me, because we had to do things like the Arthur Godfrey Show. In those days, there was 10 minutes an hour of CBS news. It did make it kind of a hybrid, I guess, because we were still kind of a top 40 station, a pop music station, and still running all the CBS programs. And then you're right, there was a more of an edge at night, I guess, thinking that our audience would be a little younger at night, so there was more edge then. And thank goodness, less CBS programming at night as well.
Well, I think the other thing, Bill, is it was pretty heavily day-parted, because when I started in 64, we were still running 2 hours of country music from 5 to 7, before KVOC started with country. Then
yeah,
there were midday picks, which were you know, between 7 and 5. And then there was a 5 to 8 day part for music. And then after 7 o'clock, that's when we could finally play the House of the Rising Sun. You couldn't play it any earlier than the day than after 7.
Well, let's take a little listen. The voice you just heard was that of Don Sherwood or Alan Bowker. Now let's go back into the Katy time machine and into the vault and dig out a piece of audio from August the 25th of 1965.
Neil Strauser, CBS News, New York.
From Casper, it's Don Sherwood Showtime. It's Kelly Walsh Football on KTI, brought to you by the Casper Lumber Company, the Farm Bureau Insurance Company, and Wardrobe Cleaners. Don't miss Kelly Walsh Football Friday nights on KTI, also brought to you by the Hilltop Bank, Fleming Supply, and D&M Radiator.
Okay, stay tuned for Kelly Walsh Football September 3rd when the Trojans open their season against Gillette. This will be the first game in the history of the Trojans, so don't miss it, Friday night, September 3rd. Now 18 minutes past the hour of 6, Mr. Roger Miller.
Got to again.
Used to love me once, and now you got to again. That's Roger Miller on KATI. And now standing 21 minutes past the hour, exactly past 6 o'clock. Temperature outside standing 5151, carefully Katie counted degrees outside.
Now a more convenient time for the Arthur Godfrey Hour. Every morning at 10:10, hear the Arthur Godfrey Hour on The Lively One.
Okay, don't you miss it. Today at 10:10, Arthur Godfrey. And the next time you hear someone saying that everything is going to the dogs, well, agree with him. Durwood Kirby does. And he tells us today on Dimension at 2:30. Time for Katie Classic, Mr. Tony Bennett. It's the good life. It's the good life. Tony Bennett for you this morning. Liking to remind you, of course, that Bill Sims will be in here from 12 until noonish this afternoon. 12 until noon, the Bill Sims radio program.
There you go. A little portion of the Don Sherwood show from, you did that, what, Monday through Friday from 5 to 7 in the morning, Don?
Actually, while I was there, I did Monday through Saturday, 5 to 7, and Sunday mornings at 6:50. So I did that my two final years in high school. I listen to that now, and I think, oh, I'm so glad I got out of announcing. I really wasn't that good, but I certainly had a good time.
Well, you got to remember, and I fall into that same group. And Warren, I don't think you were over. Were you out of your 20s when you left, Katie?
Oh, no.
You know, we were all just kids. I started at Katie when I was 15, started at KVOC when I was 13. Bill Sims hired me, and I had been doing the Kmart show, if you might remember, Bill, the controversy we had with Sid King over that.
I don't remember that, but I remember the show. It was Sunday afternoon, I think, from the Kmart.
Yeah, 12:30 to 4. I was 15, just almost 16. Steve Brummel heard me and hired me to come to work at Katie. But part of the deal was that the Kmart show was going to stay at KVOC, where I had been doing it.
Dave, I think one of the things we should be very concerned about is whether the statute of limitations has run out on the child labor laws for all the young guys that Bill Sims hired.
Well, it wasn't just, I mean, in our conversation yesterday with Kevin, I mean, Katie was a learning school for a lot of people that were in their 15, 16, 17-year-old age group. How old were you, Warren, did you say?
I was 18.
So
I was 16.
I was 20 when I ended.
And Bill Sims, you weren't that old when you came up from New Mexico, were you?
Well, I started in radio at 17, actually, as a senior in high school.
Mm-hmm.
And you were in your mid-20s when you came to Katy.
Oh, yes. Probably 2021, indeed.
The other voices on those spots on my air check, Dave, is Larry Laverne.
Right.
Who was a big voice at that time. Do we know where he is now?
We never found Larry Laverne. His real name was Larry Lopez. As I remember, and I think, Larry, you might be able to relate to this, didn't he go to Rapid City or something?
Correct. He did, yes. And Bill would know that, too.
He went to another radio station started by the same gentleman that that started Katie, Jack Brees. Let's see if anybody remembers. Let's go back to some of the jingles that we were using during the period of time. We played a couple of these yesterday, and here's one that I think is from about 1963. That's one of the things that always identified to me Katie, that Katie was a big sound in a small market. Is, I don't know, did this come from the top, from Pat Meenan or from management, Bill? The buying of the jingles and identity that Katie always had.
I'm not so sure he might have not inherited some from Ken and Misha, but no, Pat would have made that decision, I think. You know, he was the formalizer of the way he wanted Katie to sound. No doubt about that. The formatter, I guess.
What was the sales philosophy of Katie? I know that, Larry, you said that you came in 1966. You had been at KROE in Sheridan?
Correct.
And
music.
And you came down to Casper specifically for one reason, as I remember.
For the CY Strip Show, which we started in June of 1966. And it was CY Dubai on the CY Strip.
Let's see if you remember this. This is a voice from yesterday.
Now, from Katie and Casper, it's the award-winning CY Strip Show with Don Steele. Tonight's show is brought to you by Oaks Jewelers, Hilltop Downtown in Westridge, the A&W Drive-In, Gibson Discount Center, Heppner Standard Service, and Bundy's. And now, till midnight, it's the CY Strip Show, a show that wouldn't be a show without the show. Here's Don.
Does that bring back some memories?
Sure does.
Talk about the CY Strip Show. I know that it brought a whole new philosophy to Katie Radio, particularly at nighttime.
This is Bill. I think Ed Finney invented that show. Ed Finney, a sales guy.
Correct. Yes. And the philosophy was to sell advertising to merchants who were on CY Avenue. And that's how we came up with the CY Strip Show name. The exceptions were concerts. We would sell advertising to concerts. But other than that, if you weren't on the CY Strip, you didn't get to advertise from 8 till midnight.
There you go. It was also a way to sell nighttime radio, which has never been an easy thing to do.
One of the things, though, that I remember about the CY Strip Show, it was really the first time that Katie stayed pretty much to a rock music format, though, too, wasn't it, Larry? It wasn't quite the same, what we use in radio as a term, the format wheel. It was pretty much designed just for the teens and the kids on the air, correct?
Yeah, we just played the hits. We had the Katie Fabulous 14, which were each week, the top 14 songs, and we played those a lot, of course. We took a lot of requests. We had the Katie Kissing Tone. If you're a loyal KATI listener, kiss your sweetheart. And we had this.
Judy, didn't you do the Katie Kissing Tone?
You know what? I did do voices, but I don't remember.
Hopefully I did.
You were speaking of concerts a bit ago, Larry. This was a group that was very, very big in Denver and that would come to town every so often. Anybody remember the name of the group?
Got to be Sugarloaf.
No, before Sugarloaf.
For Sugarloaf. Okay?
Here we go.
Denver's fabulous Moonrakers are coming back to Casper. The first real big dance of the summer. Wednesday night, June 11th at the Industrial Building from 9 until midnight. Just $2 a person to hear songs from their latest Moonraker album. Don't miss this big show and dance. The Moonrakers are still number one. See him Wednesday night, June 11th, a Moonraker production.
Remember that one?
Of course. Sure, I should have known that.
Well, and the other one that was always big is if there was a dance, and I remember going out to the Industrial Building at the fairgrounds, and it was always a buck or maybe a buck and a quarter to get in, sponsored by, and you were a member of the JCs, weren't you, Larry?
Yes, correct.
And the JC sponsored a lot of those events out there, as I remember.
And, of course, our big concert was 1975 with Randy Hall's production company. I think it was Mountain West Productions, and we did Fleetwood Mac, Johnny Rivers, and that's where Sugarloaf came in. And that was in 1975, and it was a
incredible concert in Casper.
Well, let's take a little break again, and when we return, we'll try and take a look at some of the Katy Nighttime with Warren Cook. We'll talk a little bit about Bob Young's period of time there. He did a lot of production. He kind of played the role that we talked about with Larry Payne yesterday as a production voice. Even though everybody did production, it was always a big thing at KATI was who produced the commercials and whatnot. So stay with us. We'll be back with more in this special edition of Free For All on this Katy Classic Weekend. There's our theme song of the day, or at least of the hour. A very special edition of Free For All continues with Bill Sims, Larry Wakefield, Warren Cook, Bob Young, Alan Bowker, betterly known as Don Sherwood. Judy Lewis is in the studio. Behind me and not on microphone today is Kevin Meenan again, representing his father, Pat, and mom, Shirley. And we graciously want to say thank you to the Meenan family because they've given us a lot of audio and been a big part of this Katy Classic Weekend. One of the other individuals that contributed a lot, and we talked about him yesterday, was a gentleman by the name of Steve Brummel. He went by the Fat Daddy Steve Harris on the air, but he was not only the engineer for almost the entire decade of the 60s, but he also was the music director, program director, announcer. He did production and commercials. Is there anything that the Fat Daddy couldn't do, guys?
I don't think so.
I can't imagine. He did it all.
Bill, I think you and Steve were kind of partners there in programming the station, weren't you?
Well, you know, we went back and forth, but sure, once I became general manager, Steve had a lot more to do with programming, of course. He also worked there more than one time, as I remember, as I did. I worked at Katy two different times. Went back to Albuquerque for a year and then returned to Katy after Pat bought the station.
You know, the other thing about Katy that I remember from the 60s and listening to some of the air checks, there were so many localized features. You know, we had the Person of the Day, we had the Newcomers Club, we had the New Babies. It seemed like every different break between a record, there was always something oriented about Casper, the community. You know, that's something that I really miss from radio now. You know, but Katy just seemed to have so many things which were just kind of wired in with the people of Casper.
Here's one more little piece that you might remember, and it goes right along with what Alan was just talking about.
It's time for the Newcomers program, brought to you by Western Welcome Service. If you know of a new family in Casper, call Western Welcome at 234-7552.
Well, yes. Newcomers to Casper, there are two of them today. Reverend Harold Jack with Bethel Baptist Church from Scottsbluff, Nebraska, living at 3065 Knob Hill in Casper. Coming to us from Panama City, Florida, where the sun shines forever, Robert Pettis, who is with the Air Force in Turkey. His wife teaches at Garfield, living at 1818 Box Elder in Casper.
That's Don Sherwood from, I think that's 1966, folks. But the Western Welcome Service, how long has that been gone?
That was a trade-out, guys. Did you know that?
Didn't know that.
They handed out materials about the radio station when they visited newcomers, and we mentioned them on the air. So it was a trade.
So you kind of did a little little packet that they got, and so they would get certificates and things from if they moved to town, why to introduce them to various parts of the city.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And it was exclusive. We were the only station they promoted when they went to newcomers' houses. So you know, it was good. People got to listen to Katy Radio. We hope.
Here's a little piece of audio, and I didn't get much of a chance to edit it that came from Katy. We were talking earlier about Steve Brummel. This is the only part of an air check from Steve that I have.
1957, got a picket there, Ruth Erd, the original Johnny Cash hit. Also the only Johnny Cash hit. No, that's not true. I walk the line.
Proves that it's right, because you're mine. I walk the line.
That was Steve Brummel, and he was going into a very popular program.
The friendly Red Barn staff, and avoid the chicken middleman, Marco.
And now, the Red Barn Drive-In, 7-Eleven East 2nd, presents today's exciting episode
of
Chicken Man.
Well, the right-winged warrior is now an established celebrity.
Katie was very popular with the kids and everybody with the Chicken Man show. How did that come about, Larry?
Well, let's see. Bill, didn't you have that program lined up, Chicken Man?
I think it was syndicated, yes, indeed.
Yeah, okay.
And it was out sponsored for it. Yeah.
And it was out of Chicago. Just
that's
a great
right,
program.
That's right.
Yeah.
It was a guy that was on the competition to WLS in those days, it seems to me. He was the other rock station in Chicago.
Yes.
He also did another series that I believe Katie carried, I Don't Have Any, was The Tooth Fairy, if I remember right. Do you remember?
Correct, and that was a follow-up program also. We did I'm going to just mention this real quickly, because Johnny Shea, who worked for Katie for a long time, he may deny this, but we did a special promotion with Red Barn. We had people draw what they thought Chicken Man would look like, and we gave away a very nice prize, and it turned out that Johnny Shea, who was working for us, was the winner, but he put another name on the entry. So you can ask Mr. Shea about that when you talk with him, the retired teacher in Douglas, Wyoming.
Johnny was there kind of like Warren. He started out mowing yards and doing janitorial and ended up being on the air in the late 60s, then left for a time, came back in the 70s. And if I'm not mistaken, Larry, didn't you hire him as the chief engineer and was doing engineering for a while?
Yes, and of course Johnny was very involved with the Troopers, and we traveled thousands of miles with the Casper Troopers, and he actually did some of those live broadcasts as well. But Johnny was just a great, well, pardon the pun, trooper working for Katie, and he was kind of a jack of all trades.
One of the other things that I think Katie was always famous for is good news people. It started with in the late 60s. I remember you had a lady that you hired that I believe was from Washington, D.C., Carolyn Burridge.
Correct.
Then came Don Hardy, who later went on to, I believe, wasn't he the press spokesman for one of the senatorial staff, Cliff Hansen or one of them. Of course, later on in the 70s, NBC justice correspondent Pete Williams was there. He was the NC school reporter on the Katie School Report on Sunday nights.
Yes, that's how Pete started in radio.
Right. One of the things that you also started during your administration there, Larry, was the KATI I Spy. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, it was KATI Spy Mobile News Reports. And just about everyone at the station, including salespeople, had a mobile phone in their car. Of course, that's way before cell phones. If people in Casper heard a siren, the dials would turn to 1400. They knew that we were going to have a live report soon on the radio. And it was just a great service that we provided for the central Wyoming area.
Larry, here is the very first KATI spy report from August of 1971.
We've got 10 minutes now before the hour of 8 o'clock, and we have roving newsman Don Hardy speaking live and direct from the KATI Newsmobile.
Okay, Gene, how are things going on over at the station? We're on CY right now, and driving along, if you're driving by in your car, give us a little toot on the horn, and we want everybody to know we're broadcasting live and direct mobile. And we will be bringing every news event in town to you first on Katie Radio. And just very briefly, we thought we'd mention about the trooper homecoming tomorrow afternoon, late tomorrow afternoon. Katie will be escorting the troopers into town and broadcasting mobile while we do it. And of course, we want you to know that the troopers will be going right to the NCHS auditorium, at which time they'll put on a performance. We expect about 5,000 people there. We'll be terribly disappointed if they aren't there. Of course, the troopers' second place win is certainly a very fine accomplishment in Dallas, Texas the other night.
The troopers did a fabulous job down there, Don. As a matter of fact, it was said that it was the finest performance they'd done in their entire career.
I think the troopers put out so much work, Gene, that really everyone should turn out for their homecoming, and we want this to be one of the biggest homecomings.
Don Hardy from 1971 in KATI Spy, Larry.
Great. Thanks for sharing that.
And the other voice there was Gene Wallace, who you will hear tomorrow in our 70s version of the KATI spy report. This is audio. This is one of the jingle packages from, I believe, the late 60s and into the early 70s that, Larry, you probably bought this package called Reaching Out and Touching You. Now, where I got this copy or this version of this whole jingle package, you might find surprising. I talked with Pete Williams in Washington, and he says, you know what? I have the entire jingle package of Reaching Out and Touching You.
Is that right?
Apparently, he took it off of the carts when he was working there in the 70s, and he is an audio pack rat, as am I. He had the entire package, plus a lot of other great stuff. Larry, well, one of the other things...
Thank you, Pete Williams.
One of the other things that I have audio of, you did play-by-play, too.
Yes, Bill and I, actually, when I started at Katy, he and I did play-by-play, and then I went on, when Bill left, to do, we did the Mustangs, the Trojans, Casper College Thunderbirds as well.
I did the first couple of years of Kelly Walsh basketball, I remember that, sometimes traveling with them and sometimes getting feed from other stations of the away games. And then I remember once you, Larry, we did something quite unusual. When we put KAWY on, we did a basketball game in stereo.
And to our knowledge, Bill, I think it was the first true stereo basketball game in the country.
It was crazy. You were on the left channel, I was on the right channel, and you went with one team, I went with the other. When one had the ball, you talked, and the other I did, and it's back and forth. It was quite fun.
At least it got
interesting during the first jump ball. It's like, who talks?
You know? Right.
At least you didn't do what I've heard some people do in small markets, where they put one school on one channel and another school on the other channel, and the people can listen to whatever game they want to. But, boy, don't put them up in the middle. Here's...
work on binaural radios.
Yes, there you go.
So far, and is 0 for 1 at the free throw line.
This is Larry Wakefield and Brad Bachman from 1970.
Cal Stewart, where did he come from? Well, he came right up. Well, they call it traveling on Stewart, but he did a great job. Bent right up and over 6'3" Mark French. And now everybody gets down on their hands and knees, and that means it's contact lens time on the floor, right?
I'm sorry, this is always really, it's kind of funny, you know, it's not that they lose a little.
Larry, one of the things that I remember about you doing play-by-play is, as you will remember, you had joined the National Guard. And Casper College had done very well in the 1970-69-70 season and ended up going to Hutchinson, Kansas. Do you remember that?
Yes, to the National Finals, correct.
National Junior College Finals in Hutchinson, Kansas. But it happened to be your National Guard weekend.
And technically, it's Army Reserve, but it's close enough.
Okay,
it's
weekend
warriors, it's okay.
Yeah, okay. Well, and so you and Brad had gone to Hutchinson, but you couldn't, and you thought, okay, well, the chances of the T-Birds getting into the finals, well, we'll just work with that when we can. Do you remember that?
And they got in the finals.
And who had to leave to go back to play Weekend Warrior?
That would be me.
And it so happened that I had never really done play-by-play in my life, but I was going to Casper College at the time and had been doing the play-by-play for the local cable. And Casper College was the electronics department, was doing the broadcasts. So I ended up with Brad Bachman in Hutchinson doing play-by-play for the T-Birds. And as I remember, I think they took fifth that year or something along that line.
That sounds probably correct. But Sweet Erickson did such a great job with the Thunderbirds, and we had fun covering the T-Birds.
Of course, Sweet Erickson went on later to be in the Hall of Fame for junior college. His assistant coach was a gentleman by the name of Ken Rocklitz, who later went on and coached and ended up in the Hall of Fame from Northwestern Junior College up in, Powell? Katie was there and at one point covered both high schools and Casper College.
That is correct. We were busy.
Let's take another short break on this special edition of Free For All. Back with a special edition of Free For All, and we have a cast of thousands here with us again today. Bill Sims from Puerto Rico, Larry Wakefield, Warren Cook, Bob Young, Alan Bowker, betterly known as Don Sherwood. In the studio with us is Warren Cook and Judy Lewis, and Kevin Meenan, representing the Meenan clan, and it is a clan, and he's here in the studio with us as well. One of the things that was Pat Meenan's love, besides Katie, was another radio station that he signed on the air, one of the very first FMs in the state of Wyoming. Who wants to talk about that, guys?
He was ahead of his time wanting an FM station before anybody had an FM radio, but Pat was intent on doing that, and he wanted to do it. We applied. I remember he named it. He wanted K-A-W-Y to mean Casper, Wyoming. And we did what a lot of FMs do in the beginning. We went beautiful music, and it was automated. And frankly, it was kind of boring, but it was what was being done at the time with FM radio stations. We didn't sell a lot of ads on that station. And of course, later the programming was changed.
Here is my only portion of KAWY.
The sound of beautiful music in stereo is on KAWY, where the time is 6:20.
That was the automated time check guy.
Yeah, that's correct.
Ray Ebert, bless his heart, was trying to sell advertising on KAWY. He was the first sales manager for KAWY, and I don't think there were probably 50 car radios in town with FM on them. Were there, guys?
Not very many, no.
We would go out and give free commercial packages to car dealers if they brought in a car with an FM radio in it. And we also met with appliance stores in Casper to push FM and FM stereo, and we would give them free advertising if they had FM on their radio. So that's how we kind of got things going. We had lined up actually it was an appliance store that was going out of business that owed us quite a bit of money. So we got our hands on a bunch of FM stereo radios, and we selectively gave some of those away so that, like Dick Cedar up at Sunrise Lanes and some others, would have our music playing in stereo to, you know, get people listening to us. So that was part of that promotion.
I think let's do a little round robin, folks. We'll start with Alan Bowker out in California. Alan, give me some of your impressions of Katie during the time that you were there, and just some thoughts.
In all of the time that I spent in broadcasting, I think that Katie was the most localized, the most in touch with the community of any station that I had been with. And if any station is really the soul of a community, I think it was Katie. It played the right music, the right time. It had some very affable personalities on the air. I was in high school at the time that I was on the air, and I would go to school in the homeroom class that I had with Jay Breckeisen at NCHS. You know, he would ask, you know, why did you play that song at 6:15? You know, people that in the school were in touch with it, people in the community, I think they did a very darn good job, Dave.
Let's go to Tucson and Bob Young. You were there during the early and mid-60s and did a lot of commercials. You were also on the air, though. Talk about your impressions of Katie.
Well, you know, Dave, I have to agree with Alan Bowker. He says that we were at the right place at the right time. It was, it really was a very magical time. Much of what I still do now, I owe to my experience at KATI. And I will never forget the days that we moved into the new studios there on Katy Lane. A friend of mine came over and agreed to help us move the record library, which was no small thing. And we got most of it moved. He was in the process of setting things up, and the whole thing collapsed on him. He survived.
Warren Cook has, he was telling me earlier off the air, how did you move the records, Warren? Do you remember?
I had several of my friends in the afternoon after school come over, and they brought brooms and mops, and used the handles to stab through the holes of the 45s. There was probably 2,000 or 3,000 in the production room and another couple thousand out in the garage. And they threw them into, I think Pat Meenan was lent his car and hauled them over to the new studios with all these kids in the back seat with all these records. By the time we got on the air at night, everything was gone except the particular little bin that we had for my show. Mm-hmm. And I moved that over in my car when we did the move, so everything was gone.
You said earlier also that you were the last voice on at the McKinley Street Studios and the first voice at Katy Lane.
Well, Alan would normally have been the first voice on at the new studios. However, when Fat Daddy and I moved everything over, we had to wire the stuff up in the bullpen because the control room wasn't ready yet. And it wasn't ready for about 3 weeks. So we had to wire everything up and set it on an old wood table, and the turntable was just sitting around. So in order to make sure when Alan came in the morning that everything was going, we had to test it. So I signed on at 3:46 in the morning, and just being a joke, I said that if anyone was listening to me and would call in or write in, we'd send them the record I was playing, which happened to be Wonderland by Night, the album. And someone from California called in and said he was listening. So we had to, Judy had to send that record. I put it on her desk, and she packed it up and sent it out to him. So technically, I was the last voice off and the first voice on.
Speaking of Warren Cook, here's a little bit of Warren's performance, not necessarily from that evening, but we're going to go back to November of 1965.
Known as the Silky, with an old Beatle hit there called You've Got to Hide Your Love Away. It's number 10 this week on the Fab 14 Survey.
Coming to Casper, November 27th, Jimmy Gilmer and the Fireball. Only $150 per person. Girls requested to wear skirt or dress. Another Casper JC presentation.
There's the Katy kissing tone, wasn't it?
Here comes the Dave Clark Five. Over and over and over and over and over and over and over. The Dave Clark Five with the number 9 tune. Right now it's number 8. This is Dino Martin and I Will.
And I Will.
Oh, you will?
The news is next on KTI Casper. K-A-T-I News.
Good evening. This is Warren Cook with the 9 o'clock edition of KTI.
I just want to reiterate what the other guys are saying about our closeness we had with the community on the night show. We were very phone-oriented. We had the Katy quizzes. We had one every hour. We had the platter pull every night where people would call in and vote yes or no, and we'd break the record if it was got no. We had request and dedication, and we had one of those every hour. So we talked to the public constantly on the night show and on throughout the day.
And
every day we had This Is Be Kind to Somebody, yeah.
And then you also did the Fab 14 survey. That was what you were doing here, where you were counting down the records. And the other thing, even though you were CBS during the day, you still did a local newscast at night.
I had one newscast at 8 o'clock with Neil Strausser. And after that, I did the news by myself.
Warren, any final comments about your time and experiences at the Big 14?
Well, it was a lot of fun, a lot of fun. Had a lot of groupies come in, giving tours of the studio, talking on the phone with them all the time. It was a lot of fun.
Any other final remembrances? How about moving over to 1400 Katy Lane?
Well, the whole crew was there. The sales, Pat, all the staff was there.
We had a painting party to paint the new building in December of 1965, and the painting party was all Katy staff, and that was That was quite an activity.
Judy, you were there for a lot of years, saw a lot of beer cans roll through the building at very one time or another. I know that Coors was always a favorite, and whatnot. But you gave away, as we said, a lot of 45s and six packs of Pepsi and other things. Talk about some of your remembrances to wrap things up here.
You know what? It was a fabulous time. And the people that I met there, the people that came in and came out of our lives were so special. But, of course, the one that was number one was Pat Meenan. And I stayed there until he sold the station, which was in 1983. Tried to stay there for about six more months, and then I left. But was it the best of times? Oh, yeah, the best of people.
And she's still doing it today, folks, and she looks just as great as she did in 1964 when we would go pick up those Katie Quiz prizes. One final piece of audio here before we get some final comments. This is one that this is more contact with the community, folks.
Who's new in Casper? KATI presents the New Babies Report.
Well, over the Christmas vacation, we had quite a few people born in Casper. On the 23rd, a girl born to the Charles Waddy family at 1024 St. John Street in Casper. On the 24th, a boy born to the Charles Manning family at 708 and a half Oakcrest.
We wanted to go back. My boss, Bob Price, who's on in the mornings here 6 to 9 during this Katy Classic weekend, he wanted to go back and see if we could find these people who were born 40 and 50 or 45 years ago to see if they were still in the Casper area. Okay, Bill Sims, we will get your final comments, and then Larry. I know you did this yesterday, too, but with this group, talk a little bit about your feelings.
Well, I'm, again, honored to be among these folks and talk about this wonderful experience we all had back when. Met a lot of great people. Again, like others, I'm so thankful to Pat Meenan. He let a guy at 22 be a program director, and at 24 I was a general manager. And 5 years later, I bought my first radio station. So I owe a lot to Pat Meenan, for sure.
Larry Wakefield, you were there throughout the latter part of the 60s and almost through the entire segment of the 70s. Your comments about Katy?
Well, I think the key to our success was serving the public. We were so involved with the community, with remotes, promotions, New Babies reports, the Be Kind Twos, and don't forget the doggone reports, because if someone lost a cat or dog, they'd call us, and from those reports, we helped start the Casper Humane Society many years ago. I give credit to the Meenan family, to Bill Sims, and all of our wonderful production people, the engineering, sports, Chuck Harkins, Bob Coleman. We had a great sales staff, Frank Barrett, Connie Moore Ashbaugh, Leah Boyd, Ray Ebert. It was just a great combination of people, lots of local talent, and something that we could all be proud of. If I could mention one more thing, I think part of the success of radio overall in Casper could be credited to Bob Price and Jack Rosenthal of K2 and their fine staff, the Bubecks and Fred Hildebrand at KBOC, and then we had Katy and KAWY. So four different stations, four different formats, but we all worked together to serve the community of Casper and that area. And I think that's why radio was so successful during those years. Yeah, and of course, when K2 went 50,000 watts, they were heard everywhere. I could hear them in my toaster at my house, you know.
You know, Dave, I need to throw in one last comment.
Mm-hmm.
Steve Brumell and I were sitting in the front seat of his Barracuda in the parking lot of 314 Katy Lane, listening to a set that Bob Young had just done that was just absolutely superb, with a lot of characters and some great personality. Steve turned to me and said, you know, Katy is a station that we could pick right up out of Casper and drop in Denver and compete with the big guys.
I agree. I agree completely. Well, this has been a real trip, folks, a trip down memory lane, of course. Thank you to Judy Lewis, Alan, Bob Young, Warren, Larry Wakefield and Bill Sims. We'll do it again tomorrow morning at 9 a.m. with another group of the 70s folks, Jock Blaney, Doc Mueller, Pete Williams, and folks in that era of just another generation of Katy people. So thanks to everybody. We really appreciate all your efforts, and we'll finish it out with one final little jingle here. Yeah. Thanks, all.
Thanks for coming
away.
Take care.
This has been Free for All, your morning telephone discussion program. Opinions expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KATI, its ownership, management, employees, or sponsors.